couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about The Wrath of Man, Here Today, The Human Factor, The Bad Batch, and Mythic Quest Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Horror Express. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It's actually kind of a slow week for news in movies. I don't think we're going to have a fully functional movie world the way we had before the pandemic, really any time solidly in 2021. I think that by the time 2022 rolls around, we'll have shuffled off a lot of the problems and restrictions. But this gives me a chance to talk about the return of theaters. And I've talked a little bit about it in the past, and I swerved into some of these discussions, but just holistically, I want to address the elephant in the room, and it is, what's going to happen to streaming? Because here's the reality. These streaming services have had a huge boost in viewership and membership and opportunity over the last better part of a year, a little bit more. And some of them, like obviously like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, were already there. They already had stuff in the pipeline and they were already producing content, but they really stepped up their game with the pandemic. And on top of it, you had new streaming services like Disney Plus or HBO Max that was sort of finding its footing. And you had Peacock that actually premiered last year or the year before, but it really had some opportunities once the pandemic hit. And you have Paramount that is now the version of what CBS All Access was. We're going to get theaters back, but I think, and I've said this before, I think theaters are going to be a little bit different. I do not think that people are going to be just switching 100% back to the old model. And I said this before the pandemic, like years ago, I was saying, back when I was a kid, you know, in the 80s, and every single advancement in technology was aimed at making the home experience better and closer to a theatrical experience. For example, color television came out in like, what, the late 50s, early 60s. Then I remember when I was a kid in the 80s, they developed stereo broadcast. But you still were watching a tube TV on the other side of the room. They had flat screen TVs and big screen TVs, but the LCD and LED market for the TV and the plasma TV, so you can have that really true flat screen with vivid colors, those only started showing up for, you know, reasonable personal ownership, you know, 12 years ago, 11 years ago. I remember I had one of the guys who used to do Fat Guys at the Movies with me, Neil Miller, he actually had a job at Best Buy, and he got an early flat screen TV. I mean, but it was thousands of dollars and he got it with a discount and everything. But, you know, that was not something that your average person could just drop some money on. At that time, it cost like $300 for a regular tube TV. But now we have flat screen TVs, and then they brought in 3D even into the home, and they have 4K. And I mean, you can get a 100-inch TV and hook it up to a pretty decent stereo system and really emulate a theater quality. And they've got these special chairs you can buy for your home. And it wasn't until recently, maybe the last 10 years, that theaters have started to mimic the home experience. You start having alcohol being served because you used to not be able to have alcohol in a lot of movie theaters unless it was like a draft house of some sort. They had very comfortable chairs, these like Barca loungers that you'd sit in. You started to have table service, not just concessions, not just popcorn and pretzel bites, but you're getting chicken wings and pizza and all that kind of thing that regular theaters were going for. There's suddenly kind of the worm turned, and while the theaters had certain things that you didn't have at home, like a full Dolby digital sound system and a big screen TV that took up an entire wall, you had all these other creature comforts. Well, now we've had a year of people getting used to watching stuff at home. And you can't expect people to all come slamming back into theaters. Maybe for some, and I know that there's a certain communal experience and a certain social aspect to movie theaters. But the streaming services are not just going to roll over. And that's case in point, Paramount Plus, which is the rebrand of CBS All Access. And there's not a coincidence that that came in near the tail end of the pandemic with them really trying to push people to get subscriptions. But Paramount Plus has come out and said that they're going to be dropping a movie a week, which is kind of following the Netflix model. And you're looking at stuff like Peacock, which at some point Peacock's, they're already putting out original programming that they're starting to aggressively advertise onto web services and mobile games and that sort of thing. But they're going to start to try and want a piece of this pie. And while I don't think you're going to see it 100% going away from cinemas, I think, and I've said this for a while, you're going to start seeing the smaller movies maybe going to theaters, but also being available online. This whole day and date thing that Warner Brothers is doing, I wouldn't expect that for Godzilla IMAX movies, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see that starting to be done for other movies just down the line. The other thing is, and we're going to talk about Luca in the trailer park, there was a story I saw a while back that the Pixar people are kind of bummed that their stuff has been going direct to streaming pretty much. Everything's Onward sort of took a truncated release, and then they had Soul go directly to streaming, and now they've got Luca going directly to streaming, that they're worried that, well, it's not cinema. But I think that the human being's perception of cinema has changed. Home cinema is a real thing. It's no longer something debuting on streaming. Is you maybe it categorized as an internet-based things, but it's not just some web series that's being done. You're getting major names and major talent working on it and consistently working on it, and still have. There's a convenience factor there that people are going to want to hold on to. So yes, we're going to have movies back, but I think we are seeing a renaissance in streaming that is not going to go away right now. And even when theaters are 100% open and the pandemic has pretty much faded as much into the distance as it's going to, you're still going to have that stuff out there. And it's going to be significant. You are not going to be able to ignore streaming. And all that's going to do from this point forward is compete with theaters. And this is a landscape that's going to be continually changing beyond the pandemic and beyond the opening of theaters. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Luca. I mentioned it earlier in the segment here, and this is coming to Disney Plus on June 17th.
We do not go anywhere near the surface. Got it?
Everything good is above the surface.
Walking.
Air.
The sky, clouds, the sun.
Have you ever gone to the human town?
Yeah.
I'm kind of an expert.
My name is Giulia Marcovaldo. We underdogs have to look out for each other. This is my dad.
What do you think he kills with those?
Anything that swims.
This looks charming as all get out. It looks wonderfully beautiful and sweet and has all the elements that you'd expect from a Pixar movie. Looks like it's going to have a lot of heart. It's going to have some great characters. It's going to have some beautiful animation. And even though some of the Pixar people are bummed that it's not going to theaters, I think you can get a lot out of this watching it on a big screen TV at home. It's a movie for the family, and that's what it's about. It's not necessarily the size of the screen you have to see. It's the people you're going to see it with. So I'm looking forward to Luca. The next one I want to hit is another one that's going directly to streaming, and that is Stranger Things Chapter 4 on Netflix sometime in the future.
Good morning, children.
Good morning, Papa.
How are you today?
Good, Papa.
Good. I'm glad to hear it, because today I have something very special planned for you.
Nevin, are you listening?
This is just a teaser more than anything else. We knew we were going to go back a little bit to the history, trying to uncover what was happening in the past that got us to where we are. I loved season 3 of Stranger Things. I think that was actually the strongest one. So I'm looking forward to see what they do here, and I want to see more development of the characters. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I just wish we'd get a release date. Who knows when this is going to happen? Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Here Today and the human factor. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Here Today. Billy Crystal directs himself as an aging comedian, hiding his dementia from his family, only to spark an unlikely friendship with Tiffany Haddish.
Doctor, thanks for seeing me so late.
How's the writing going?
It's all of these young kids.
Are you doing what we talked about?
I try not to vary my routine.
You have medicines to help you.
Who are they?
That's my family.
If they're your family, why do you have their names written down?
Charlie, you can't be alone anymore.
If you ever need my help, I'm here.
I'm writing something, and I have to finish before my words run out.
I'll take care of them.
May I ask what your relationship is?
I don't know.
I kind of grew up with Billy Crystal as a comedian. I remember growing up with him being on Saturday Night Live when I was a teenager. I remember growing up and seeing him in all the movies. You know, of course, he was in The Princess Bride, and he was in City Slickers and When Harry Met Sally. And, I mean, he became, you know, a superstar. And when I think of Billy Crystal, I mean, I have some very fond memories. It's been like 20 years since he's directed a movie. But even more so than that movie he did with Ben Schwartz last year, where he was an actor in that one, but he was getting older, but he was very funny as he was a drunk. But it was about a guy aging. This one is very specifically about a guy aging. And it does kind of bring home the fact of how old Billy Crystal is. And people get old. That happens. You know, he's about the age of my mother. It's interesting watching this movie because as I was watching it, it's very clear he's drawing a little bit from his own personal experiences as a comedy writer and a performer. Then I wonder, I'm like, oh my gosh, do you have an estranged relationship with your family like this? Are you having dementia issues? And I find it interesting that this is like the fourth movie I've seen in the last 6 months about dementia. Anthony Hopkins was in The Father. He won an Academy Award for it. There was also Supernova and Falling. These are all award films that, you know, only one of them got traction in the award season. But this is like the fourth movie that's addressing it. And that's in addition to like something like Still Alice, which Julianne Moore did several years ago, where I think Hollywood's paying attention to dementia. We've had dementia showing up in movies before, but a lot of times it was done for comedic effect even. Nowadays, it's a very serious thing, and you got kids in the sandwich generation who are taking care of their children and taking care of their parents. I've faced that myself in my own personal life. Not for the dementia side, but for having to take care of my father when he was in his final days. But this does seem to draw a lot of personal elements to Billy Crystal because he's marginally playing a version of himself. Now, on one hand, I watch this and it feels like it's written by a 70-some-year-old guy who doesn't understand how the real world works. It's like showing him not knowing how to use a phone, for example. Those jokes don't land. Those have been done so many times before, and then watching the old person trying to pretend like they don't know how to use a phone, it just feels really awkward. And like the opening stuff with him and Tiffany Haddish is a little rough because they're very different comedic actors. Billy Crystal is very much who Billy Crystal is, you know, his shtick, and she's her own shtick. And while they don't clash with each other the way like her and Kevin Hart did, they don't quite mesh until you get to know the characters. And so like the beginning of this movie is very awkward and it has, it really has trouble getting its footing. And there's parts in this film that are pretty obvious and jokes that either don't land or they land almost too well and they're not very funny and some corny scenes. At its core, there's a heart and there's a real sweetness. The whole shtick of the movie is they end up getting to know each other through this weird sort of almost a meet cute kind of happenstance. And they develop this friendship, but they never turn it to a romantic thing, which I think is great because I'm tired of seeing, I don't care whether it's an old man or an old woman with a younger person. That's oh God, that story's been done to death. But this is just two people who genuinely have an affection for each other and want to take care of each other and they're friends. And there's even a scene, you hear it in the trailer, where the doctor asks, what's your relationship? They're like, I don't know. And once they get through Tiffany Haddish being her brash, obnoxious self and him shticking it up, there's some real tender moments there. And there's some real sweet elements to this movie that, doggone it, kind of pulled at my heart. Even though there's parts of it that are awkward and don't land and they don't quite work and it's not a 100% great movie, but it works. In a weird way, having grown up with Billy Crystal as a comedian, I almost seem to know him more and know him better through this movie. So I consider that a success for him. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the human factor. This documentary looks back at the Middle East peace process from the early 1990s to now, told by the American negotiators.
Middle East peace is always a very attractive proposition. I cannot think of a Secretary of State that did not want to get involved in the Middle East.
Arafat is beaming. For him, he's arrived. This was emotionally wrenching for Rabin, knowing he was going to have to shake Arafat's hand.
When I look back now, we saw the world the way we wanted it to be. We did not see the world the way it was.
I say going back to the 1990s, because this stuff has been going on for centuries. Conflict and battles in the Middle East is nothing new. But what this does is it tracks it from actually the late days of the George H.W. Bush administration, where James Baker was the Secretary of State, and how he was setting things up, and how the terms kind of pivoted into the Clinton administration, and there was this well-known peace accord that happened where they actually brought Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat together, and they shook hands. That was a big deal. And they go into detail about why it was such a big deal that they would shake hands, and the fact that, you know, Yasser Arafat is a terrorist and he's kind of lives in bunkers and everything, doesn't sleep in the same place twice, and he feels like he got legitimized during this. And that was one of the complaints that some people had. And of course, you have the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin and all the political fallout from that, and it tracks it all the way through Clinton's presidency. But it's mainly about how Clinton was trying to save it partly for his legacy and how it just kept crumbling every time because of all the problems that the Middle East has. And so it's an interesting look at it from the diplomat's point of view and the negotiator's point of view. And part of it as an American is you don't know the ins and outs of Middle Eastern politics. You don't know the ins and outs of Israeli and Palestinian feuding and what little things can mean and there's stuff that just goes over our heads. I'll tell you this, though, and I've talked about this many times on the show, but in 2014, I had the opportunity to visit the Jerusalem Film Festival, and I spent 2 weeks in Israel. And at this film festival, I'd say most of the films I saw focused on like one of three things. It was either the conflict between old tradition and new tradition, especially religious. There was also a lot of stuff about the Holocaust. And then there was a lot of stuff about the two-state solution and can there be peace in the Middle East? And it dealt with the conflict between the Israelis and the Arabs and all of Palestine and everything. And if there's anything I took away from that is I'm like, there may not be a middle ground for this. There are people who say, well, maybe there is ability to have peace. But when they both essentially diametrically oppose the same thing, meaning that this land belongs to the Arabs or the Israelis, and that's it. It's sort of like the gun control issue. There are some people that will never have any sort of common ground. There are some people who believe that you should be able to have a gun no matter what, and then there are people who think that we should get rid of guns altogether. There is no coming together between those two points of view. You can't compromise that. And that's, I think, one of the problems. At least that's always been my takeaway from the Middle East. But this deals with a little bit more of the minutiae of the history and the culture. And it's an interesting look at the process. It's a little exhausting to watch because, you know, it's the Middle Eastern peace process. That stuff doesn't come easy. Though I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Wrath of Man and the Bad Batch. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Wrath of Man. Guy Ritchie directs Jason Statham as a man who gets a job as an armored truck driver in order to get revenge on some thieves.
Border Coast Security, specialized in cash trucks across L.A.
Do you have any idea how dangerous this job can be?
Some idea, yeah. We ain't the predators. We're the prey.
It's like he wants trucks to get hit. He's not a cop. But if he's not a cop, what is he?
A while back, we lost two cops, a civilian too.
About my son?
He didn't make it.
I need to know who killed my son.
This dropped its trailer just about a month or so ago. It wasn't very long ago that this kind of really hit my radar. And it hit everybody's radar. And then it got dropped into the theaters because there's kind of a hold this week. you know, we're between Mortal Kombat and another Warner Brothers release next week. So it seemed like a good time to put this in there. And, you know, this is the kind of movie, Jason Statham is a bona fide movie star and he's a bona fide action hero, but his stuff never really packs the theater. He never has these $100 million opening weekends, unless it's something like Hobbs and Shaw, you know, something where he's plugging into an existing mega franchise. So his movies like these can seem to work in limited theater engagements. And I think that this is the kind of thing that you're going to see populating a lot of theaters as we move forward. But these kind of movies will certainly pivot to streaming pretty quickly. It's still meant to be a theatrical run and gun experience. When I first saw the trailer for the film, I saw it was a Guy Ritchie movie, and I was thinking it was relatively straightforward. If you watch the trailer, it seems very straightforward. He's out there for revenge, and he's basically trying to put himself in the line of fire from thieves as an armored truck driver, and he's hoping to stumble on these criminals who killed somebody dear to him. And that you pull that from the trailer. And being a Guy Ritchie movie has a lot more iterations than that. Now, it's not as convoluted or twisted up as something like The Gentleman, which is his most recent movie. And to a fault, The Gentleman was really convoluted. And that's one of the problems that Guy Ritchie falls into. He tends to become more complicated than he really needs to. He makes his movies more convoluted, put more twists and turns into them when they really don't need them. And the other thing he's best known for is that street thug mentality. Now, he started out with his street thug mentality in Britain. And that's, of course, where he got Jason Statham, with stuff like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And over the years, he's kind of moved it out. Gentleman came back to England, and he's done some American stuff. I mean, well, Sherlock Holmes was an American production, but it, you know, of course, takes place in Britain. But this one is meant to have an American thug, so to speak. But it's funny because they all have that same sort of snappy dialogue, wit and witticism, and punch of lines and delivery that are in a Guy Ritchie movie. The only thing is, they're doing it all in American accents, or a lot of them are. Except for, of course, Jason Statham. Now, there's a lot more to it. It's more than just a guy putting himself in danger for revenge. It has a lot more to the plot. And I don't want to give that away because he unravels it throughout and in a very Guy Ritchie fashion. It's sort of told out of order, and you spin back on things and you see things from different points of view. So it's more meticulously constructed than it would initially lead it on to be. And in that process, you kind of do lose Jason Statham a bit, because once his character is set in motion, he doesn't do a lot of hands-on stuff, but it still works, and it still makes it a fun action movie. I've always enjoyed him as an action star, and I guess this kind of falls a bit in line with the Liam Neeson movies and Keanu Reeves' John Wick, and most recently Bob Odenkirk and Nobody, where you've got this sort of early mid or late middle-aged man going after somebody for revenge and just being relentless. And if you want to see that, you're going to get it here. This one, it's not perfect, but it definitely has the action and delivery and the violence as well, if that's what you're looking for. And if you're getting a Guy Ritchie, Jason Statham movie, you're probably looking for a little bit of that at least. So I'm going to have to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Bad Batch. In a spin-off of The Clone Wars, this animated series follows Clone Force 99, a group of enhanced clones who don't always follow their programming.
You're Clone Force 99.
You know who we are.
Hunter.
Let's go.
Echo.
Hyperdrive's online.
Tick.
Prepping to jump.
Wrecker.
Let's blow something up.
Yeah! And Crosshair.
Your move. We're all you need.
I want Clone Force 99 found and wiped out.
I never watched the Clone Wars religiously. I know people who absolutely love it. Heck, my mom has watched it religiously. She loves the Clone Wars. And my son watches it, and I know other people who have. I started watching it when it first came out, you know, like 10, 12 years ago. But when it first started, for the first 2-3 seasons, it's real clunky. I mean, each episode starts with something needs to happen on this planet, and so they dispatch somebody, whether it be Anakin and Obi-Wan, or if it's Yoda, and then there's a clones fighting droids on the planet, and there's a big firefight. And there really was no story in the early episodes, and it wasn't until they developed several series into it that they actually started getting arcs and character developments. They brought back, like, Darth Maul. And if you watch The Mandalorian, there's a whole segment in The Clone Wars. I don't know where it falls within the series, but it's one of the later seasons that has the whole Siege of Mandalore, and it gives the background of the stories of the characters that are showing up in The Mandalorian now. And they have that with The Bad Batch. The Bad Batch was this little, I think it was a 4-episode arc near the end of the series about these clones that they're enhanced or they're damaged in some way, and so they've broken off from their programming. They no longer follow everything that they have to because they got a certain degree of personality and individuality. And it was such a popular little arc on the series that they said, hey, let's spin off and do our own TV series of it. Now, they dropped the first episode on May the 4th, which is, of course, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. And that was on Tuesday, and they've dropped the second episode of this weekend on Friday. And the first episode is like 71 minutes long. I mean, it's almost pretty much feature length. And then the other episodes following it are going to be like half hour. So they kind of have this bulk-sized episode, this 3 or 4 episode length opening to the series, and then each episode is 20-some minutes long. And I'll tell you, it kicks off a heck of a lot better than The Clone Wars does because it's giving you this look into these characters. In the Star Wars universe time, it takes place right when the Emperor seizes control during Order 66, where he orders all the clone troopers to kill the Jedi. And that's where the first episode launches from. But they've already got all this stuff that's laid out in the groundwork from the Clone Wars. Like, they've had Grand Moff Tarkin show up, and they've had Saw Gerrera. They have a bit with him, and he was, of course, the crazy man who saves Jen Erso from Rogue One, played by Forrest Whitaker. Of course, in the movie, he was played by Forrest Whitaker. So they are already drawing from all this stuff that's already established in Star Wars, and they're just enriching it even more. And I don't know whether I'm going to be watching it on a religious basis, but I will say it had me more intrigued, and at least I'm following it, and I'm interested in it. I don't feel like Yoda's just going planet hopping to different battles. It feels like they are going to have a story. And what they're doing here is they're enriching the universe between episodes 3 and 4. And it's the same way, whereas The Mandalorian is enriching the universe between episodes 6 and 7, which is kind of cool. I mean, I that's what I've been wanting to see. I don't care as much about the story of Luke and Han, and they've been played out. I've seen them. I know what their stories are. What, it's a big galaxy. Have other things go on. And I think that's what they're doing here. So this lays the groundwork for some great stuff. And, you know, this may not get as many viewers as something like The Mandalorian, but it definitely is going to sate the hardcore Star Wars fan who's been wanting another weekly dose of Star Wars stuff. I would say this, if like 6-year-old Kevin had seen this on air back in the 70s, I would have lost my mind. It would have been the greatest thing ever to have a Star Wars TV series ongoing like this, or multiple ones. So you guys have no idea how lucky you are. I'm going to have to say The Bad Batch rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mythic Quest Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Horror Express. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the reviews with a look at Mythic Quest Season 2. This Apple TV Plus workplace comedy follows a group of gaming designers facing a new challenge to release an expansion.
We have a meeting with Montreal next week. Where are we with the expansion?
We've been working really well together.
Boom!
I've seen this pattern before. It's the calm before the divorce.
We are not your parents.
Something bad is gonna happen.
Gotta go big.
The high pressure and the friction.
Baby.
That's what turns coal into diamonds.
Huzzah!
Yo, what's up, Snoop?
All right, man, when you releasing that new expansion?
When you release that new album?
I did not cover the first season of Mythic Quest. I don't think I actually had access to the Apple TV stuff early enough when it first came out a year or two ago. But I remember I covered the quarantine episode, and it was interesting. I did a little bit of research. Apparently, Mythic Quest was one of those series that did get hit with COVID pretty hard. So, you know, anybody out there who's doing short films and that sort of thing, you got to look at this stuff, even if you're just some college kid, you know, shooting it in your mom's basement. Be aware of this and have your protocols, because you don't want your art, your production, to be the result of somebody getting sick. And people should be getting vaccinated. I got vaccinated. I'm doing great. My family's vaccinated. There's no reason not to get vaccinated unless you actually have a doctor telling you you absolutely shouldn't. And that's rare. So with Mythic Quest, it finally came back. And even with it, I think they were primarily cautious with it, because they have F. Murray Abraham in it, and he's in his 80s now. And so, like, the first several episodes, he was actually put in there virtually. So they didn't have him on set with multiple people. And I think that was done for very specific reasons, because he was an old guy, and, you know, you don't want to kill your cast. So they did an episode for the quarantine about this time last year, and then they did a precursor episode, sort of like a bridge episode, that came out, I think, in the middle of April, called Everlight, which was just a bonus episode. Now they've got the whole season dropped this weekend, and it carries on the story of these people developing this epic game that everybody plays and is very popular. It's essentially spinning off of World of Warcraft, you know, sort of making it similar to that, or it's medieval. And the purpose of this season is they need to do an expansion of it. They're going to do more to the game. And you have Rob McElhenney, who is, of course, the main guy playing Ian, who created the game, and Poppy, who is his co-creative director, and it's the two of them fighting all the time, and they've got a great chemistry there. But ultimately, at its heart, even though it's got the geek stuff and it's got gaming stuff, it's really a workplace comedy. And you've got the two gaming testers, the two ladies, and they started a relationship together. You've got David Hornsby playing the executive producer, and he's a complete pushover, and he's dealing with his treasonous secretary, and there's all this internal politics of the office, not just among gamers, but, you know, just the basic things about budget and that sort of thing. So it's sort of like, if you watch The Office, you wouldn't watch The Office because you love paper. You watch The Office because you like the interaction among all these people. And that's what makes Mythic Quest funny. It has very funny elements to it. It's put together by the people who do It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Rob McElhenney and Charlie Day work on it. And they run the show, but it's very different than Sunny, because it's not just about horrible people. It's about people who have actually levels of humanity trying to get along and work together and put out a product. They end up diving a little bit more into the characters and splitting characters off with each other to work a little bit more. Now, some of them end up getting a short shrift, like Danny Pudi, who's best known for Abed in Community. He plays their monetization director, and he's a real shark. And his character's kind of muted a bit throughout this season. It's not as prominent as it was last season, because they're trying to get to the humanity, and he has no humanity. But they do really flesh out, in particular, the character later on in the series. About halfway through, they really flesh out the character that F. Murray Abraham plays. And he gets a great little mini arc going on in there. So they're enriching themselves. They're enriching their own universe and playing off each other and actually trying to tell human stories and not just an overt comedy like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So I enjoyed this one. I it's a breeze to get through. You can bang through what I think there's like 9 episodes. They're releasing them once a week. But I think the first one or two come out, and then you're going to get one each week going into June or July. So it's worth checking out. If you have Apple TV Plus, check out the first season, check out the special episodes, and dive into the second season. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. And rolling into the home cinema roundup, we've got the Horror Express. Toot toot! I don't know why I just did that. Anyways, there's a reason I chose the Horror Express, and that's because it is prominently featured in the season finale of Creepshow on Shudder. Now, of course, Creepshow's being the anthology series based on the original Stephen King, George Romero compilation from 1982. And they had, I think, like, it's like 5 episodes that they dropped this season. And I reviewed the first couple episodes several weeks back, but they just finally released the last episode of the new season. And it's a single full hour-long episode about a character played by Justin Long, who develops a technology that allows him to project himself into a movie and interact with it. And the movie he loves, because he is taken when he was a kid by his dad, is The Horror Express. And he, of course, is infatuated with the main female in there. And so it's him interacting with that. And so I thought it would be a great time to go back and revisit The Horror Express. So let's do that right now. In the movie, Christopher Lee plays a scientist who brings a frozen specimen onto the Trans-Siberian Railroad, only to have the creature come to life and attack the passengers.
For 2 million years, in these subterranean caves, a creature of superhuman evil was entombed in a wall of ice, waiting to be free.
Are you telling me that an ape that lived 2 million years ago got out of that crate, killed the baggage man, and put him in there?
Yes, I am. It's alive. It must be.
Travel with us, if you dare, on the Horror Express.
This stars both Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Peter Cushing has a pretty large part in it as well. And they, of course, go all the way back to the Hammer horror movies, even though it's not a Hammer movie. But it has that feel to it because these guys are so iconic in there. And I think the movie was made in 1971. It was made in the early 70s. It was released, depending on the country, it was, I think, anywhere from 1971 to 1973. And you can see that now if you go to Tubi TV. I've talked about Tubi TV actually throughout the pandemic. It's a great little free service that has a whole bunch of, a lot of stuff. It has everything from old classic sitcoms to popular movies. Like I think they were playing the Hunger Games movies, at least in the last month. But it also has a lot of obscure stuff. You can find a lot of stuff on there that you normally can't find on the other services. And particularly for free. So you can go to Tubi and watch it. Unfortunately, it's a full frame version of the movie and the transfer is not great. And you got to deal with ads, but you can watch it for free and it's out there. And if you've watched that episode of Creepshow, it's worth watching The Horror Express. Now, the reason I was first intrigued with The Horror Express, I never knew about it when I was younger. Somebody recommended it to me like 10 years ago or so. And I'd never seen it. And I'm like, I've gotten into watching a lot of old Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing movies. There's a lot of recent Hammer movies that have been released by Shout Factory I've watched on Blu-ray. But I also just love sort of digging into their filmography. And this is one that puts a nice little cap on their careers because they're both good guys in there. Usually one of them, usually Christopher Lee, plays the bad guy. But they're both good guys trying to stop this creature. It's a neat little, if it were a TV series, it'd be almost a bottle episode because it almost all takes place on this train. And, you know, there's something evil on the train. But what's so nice about this movie is it's not just a rampaging creature. It's not just a big ugly guy with claws and teeth that's killing people. There's a lot more to it. I don't want to go into it because if you've not seen it, it's worth getting it revealed, but it's more than just a monster. There is some real depth to it and a real creepiness to it. And it thinks farther than you normally get, you know, a monster on whatever vehicle you're, monster on a spaceship, monster on a boat, monster on a train, but there's a lot more to it. And I absolutely love that part of it. Plus, of course, having a great cast being Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, you have Telly Savalas in there as well. It's a neat movie. It's worth checking out. Check it out on Tubi TV. I got to say, Horror Express kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
New releases available this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Judas and the Black Messiah, The Little Things, The Virtuoso, Big Fish in 4K, CB4, Cool as Ice, and Hemingway by Ken Burns, and let's not forget MacGruber as well gets a new release. And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week I'm going to be talking about Spiral and Those Who Wish Me Dead, the movie, not my actual personal enemies. And that's it. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.